turn the program over to you.
Thank you for that thunderous ovation. Many of you have been with me on programs like this before. It's like the fellow that had a rash and went to the doctor, and the doctor says, "Have you had this before?" And the fellow says, "Yes." And the doctor says, "Well, you've got it again." And you now have it again. I think this past few days has been one of the highlights in my career in higher education, to have had the opportunity to get together with so many liars. You know, if you've ever played liar's dice, each one tries to hide the dice in terms of what he's got. And when I asked our speaker of the day if he would not speak in terms of the subject entitled Reflections, he said, "I can't possibly do that because I can't possibly tell the truth about these guys." And as we walked in this afternoon, Mrs. Patty said to Ernest Patty as we were coming in, and she knew he was coming up here, and she said, "Now, Ernest, you behave yourself for this luncheon, will you please?" We met the guest on my far right out at the airport the other day, and Bill Wood was there, and Bob Hyatt, and Terrace Moore, and the Patties got off the plane, and we were kind of reminiscing, and we walked out, and we were all standing on the curb waiting for the car to come up, and Dr. Patty says, "You know," he says, "there are almost as many past presidents of this institution as there were students when I first came here. Back in 1922, there were 6 students and 6 faculty members. And if the legislature thinks that the ratio's bad now, that was a tremendous ratio." I did a little research for what I was prepared to do today in introducing Dr. Patty. And I start with him on my far right. I understand that has nothing to do with his politics. But Dr. Patty came here before the first course was ever offered at the University of Alaska. And in those days, college presidents did things a little differently than they do it now. Now college presidents decide how they're going to run their institution. In the old days, at least at this university, college president Bunnell checked out everything with his board of trustees. And Charles Bunnell, on the 22nd of March, and I want you to understand the things he said about Dr. Patty, wired the Board of Trustees from Denver, the Alaska Agricultural College, because that's what it was known in those days, Fairbanks. "Yours 18th received. Kirkpatrick Morgan accept." Dr. Bunnell didn't waste any extra words. "Recommend Ernest N. Patty, age 28, married, for professor geology. Salary $3,500. Graduate, University of Washington, 1919. Bachelor science degree, mining engineering geology. For young man, much practical mining experience, also has experience as teacher." Glad they added that. "Highly recommended, Dean Roberts of University of Washington." And then Dr. Bunnell goes on to recommend someone else here. We're certainly glad that Dr. Patty chose to come and later then became the third president of the University of Alaska. I did another little research job. For those of you that are interested in budgets and finance, and aside from Dr. Patty's salary of $3,500 when he first came, I was looking at the Board of Regents minutes in those days. Now, if college presidents think they got it tough now, you should have seen what they had to do in those days. Because Dr. Bunnell and Dr. Moore and Dr. Patty also, they used to go to the Board of Trustees for the payment of all sorts of bills. And you go down the board minutes and you see the payment to bakery, the payment for wells, whatever it happened to be, the presidents had to take those bills to the board, each one individually. The other thing that the presidents did in those days was that when they ran out of money, they got together with the Board of Trustees and they borrowed from them. And that's how, in the early days, Dr. Patty and Dr. Moore, as well as Dr. Bunnell, financed this institution. But in 1923 to 25, Dr. Bunnell had to ask for some extra money, because in those days we had both the territorial operation and the federal operation. And here's what you find. 1923-25 biennial budget supplement. $1,000 for fuel, $1,000 for machinery, $4,000 for administration. That was pretty reasonable in those days. $2,000 for professor salaries, $1,000 for maintenance and $1,000 for buildings. And that totals about $10,000. And when I mentioned this to Dr. Patty, he says, that's the price of a good banquet these days. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Ernest Patty, third president of the University of Alaska. And may I present Mrs. Patty, who's sitting on our right over here. Mrs. Patty. On my far left, the second president of the University of Alaska. By that time, Dr. Bunnell and others were doing things a little differently in terms of how they recommended staff and professors and college presidents. And there is a record, if you look at the Board of Regents minutes, talking about the acceptance or the offering to Dr. Moore of the second presidency. And the telegram goes as follows. We are pleased to inform you that you have been chosen president of the University of Alaska effective July 1, 1949. Please wire acceptance. They didn't give him any choice. Signed, Andrew Nerland, president of the Board of Regents. Now, Dr. Moore was a little more verbal than some of his other colleagues in the Regents and on the board, and so I could only copy down about the first few words which said, I hereby accept the great call to duty. And that's how Dr. Moore came as the second president of the University of Alaska. Dr. Moore. And on my far right, Mrs. Moore. The records of how we hired the third president of the university I could not find. In fact, I cannot find him today. Bill Wood sends his regrets today. Bill called last evening and said that he was unfortunately called away for a meeting of the Energy Corporation of Alaska, which was meeting in Anchorage today, and his presence was requested at that board meeting dealing with the North Pole Refinery and some other industrial items in this area in his capacity as executive director of the Fairbanks Industrial Development Corporation, and he was really sorry that he could not be here. On the other hand, we are pleased to have in his stead his lovely bride, Dorothy Jane Wood, who needs no introduction to this group, and their son, Bill Wood. Dorothy Jane, Bill. The records haven't been written on how the fourth president of the University of Alaska was selected, but I must tell you that in terms of budgets, one can compare the budget that Dr. Hyatt inherited with the budget that Dr. Moore inherited. And the budget that Dr. Moore inherited totaled some $86,000 per year. How we might operate an institution like this, I'll never know at that price today. But the institution certainly, in the years that these men were president and served this institution, has grown to what it is today. Having inaugurated a new president yesterday, day before yesterday? When did we do that, William?
Oh, boy.
You're the historian.
Saturday the 4th,
that was it. I'm sorry about that, but these days get to run one into the other. It's indeed a pleasure to present a man who has brought to us, I think, a wealth of insight into where the University of Alaska is going, where it ought to go in the years ahead. It's my pleasure to present to you the fifth president of the University of Alaska, Dr. Robert W. Hyatt. On my far right, two of the Hyatt children who are here today, and Mrs. Hyatt, Mrs. Judith Tuttle of Sacramento, and Dr. Gerald Hyatt of Philadelphia, and Mrs. Hyatt. Won't you stand, please? Now, when it comes to introducing our speaker today, there are a lot of things I could say about him, some of which would be true and some of which would not be true. He's probably, however, held every position that anyone could ask for at the University of Alaska except being president. How would you like that, Bill? Believe it or not, he was a chauffeur for Dr. Bunnell. Dr. Bunnell brought him to the university. Four presidents after Dr. Bunnell saw fit to keep him at the university. He's written one book, that is one major work in terms of Dr. Bunnell. And I think May and Time, having been the historian, if you will, of those early years, we hope he'll do something with the other presidents who followed. But I can't let the moment go by without telling one story on Bill, because I think it epitomizes how direct he's going to be with you today. And I think of the two bachelors who graduated from college and were living with their mothers. And one of them owned a Persian cat, and he was going on a trip to Europe. And so he asked his bachelor friend if the fellow would take care of the cat, and said yes, and the chap went to Europe. He came back. He asked his friend how the cat was, and his friend said, "The cat's dead." And the chap said, "You know, you could have done this a little more gently." He said, "First of all, you could have told me that the cat was on the roof. Then you could have told me that the cat was at the vet's. And finally, you could have told me that the cat has passed away. By the way, how's mother?" The fellow says, "She's on the roof." Without further ado, it's my pleasure to present Bill Cashin, Marshal of the University. Bill.
Thank you, Bob, and honored guests. Seems like the gown has taken over the town here today. I think I'm a little bit under false pretenses because I understood when he asked me to speak, he wanted me to introduce these past presidents. And then I come to find out that I'm supposed to be the principal speaker. And then he told me that I was going to talk on reflections. That was going to be my topic. Now, the remarks I have to make, I don't know whether they'll be reflections upon the past president or upon myself, but maybe upon both. But as has been mentioned, I have served under all five of the university presidents, seven under Dr. Bunnell, four under Dr. Moore, seven under Dr. Patty, 13 under Dr. Wood, and survived the first year under Dr. Hyde. And as Bob mentioned, a couple of years ago, I wrote a book, biography of Dr. Bunnell. The other night, I told his successors not to get their hopes up. But if I do write one, I've already got the title selected. It'll be called Survival. Now, these gentlemen have something else in common, besides all having been presidents here. None of them hired me. And to this, they all feel quite, have something deep in common. I have a picture here that I'd like to pass around. I think this crowd is small enough we'll be able to pass it around before the end of my talk. And it kind of, in a word picture, gives the reaction when one of them was asked, "Who was it that hired Bill Cashin?" So you might pass that around a little bit. And now, come to think of it, none of them fired me either. But then that's beside the point. I think that Dr. Wood's explanation is probably the best. At an assembly meeting of faculty a few years ago, when he was kind of giving the history of the place and all, he said, "Well, now you know this is a land-grant college, and as far as I can determine, Cashin was part of the original grant." But really, my survival on the faculty is not quite as spectacular, I think, as my survival as a student for the 4 years, 1933 to 1937. In my book, it's all right to mention my book once in a while, isn't it? Yeah. Well, in my book, I kind of intimate that I was quite a catch and that Dr. Bunnell made quite an effort to come to Juneau, to the legislature and an extra trip to Douglas to get me and in entice me to come up to the far north to come to college. But I've had some second thoughts about that as I reread that chapter. I see there could be another explanation. You see, he was very, very fond of holding on to every dollar that he could get his hand on. And here there were these $450 scholarship hanging idle, and he had to have somebody to put it on, and I was the victim, you see. But it was really that $450 he wanted to get use of that I think, this is my second thought, and it's probably as good an explanation as any. So I did arrive, and he decided that with my qualifications I could be a janitor. But let me tell you that he was very selective about his janitors. There were four of us in the main building, which was the prize of the whole campus in those days. And let me tell you who my fellow janitors were. Two seniors, Bill O'Neill, one of them, eventually served 25 years as president of the Board of Regents. Chuck Herbert, whom I understand is now one of our commissioners in Juneau. Pat O'Neill, whom I understand is president of International Mining Company, address on Park Avenue, New York. How I got there, I don't know, but I'm proud to have been the fourth one in that group, I'll tell you. Well, I almost lost the job as chauffeur the first month. And since there are so many old Fairbankses here, let me tell you how I almost lost the job that I had just started. I drove his 1926 Buick, and I was the chauffeur. And it was a Saturday night in mid-June, and he said, "Bill, I'd like to go to town and spend the evening. I think Johnny McGinn is in town." And some of you old-timers know Johnny McGinn was an old lawyer that was visited there in the summer. And he said, "I'd like to go in, and I was going to meet Johnny, and we might go to dinner. And then pick me up at the Nordale, 10 o'clock. All right, I'm fine. I drove him to town, left him off. He slipped me a dollar, nice big brown dollar. He said, "Go to the show, pick me up at 10 o'clock. And I said, "You, 10 o'clock? "Sure." "Yeah," he said, "if I'm not there," he said, "oh, don't worry about me. I'll probably be able to find my way home all right." Well, I went to the show, and after the show, I ran into some of my colleagues, fellow students around town. I think Don Link and Bill Hunter and Cy Clausen after the show, and they said, "Bill, a big dance at the Moose Hall. Let's go down, and you're going to join us at the dance." "Well, I'd like to, except I have to take Dr. Minnell home." "Oh, gee, well, can you come back?" "No, no chance, I don't think." But I said, he did say, if he wasn't there at 10 o'clock, that he'd be able to find his own way home. So let's just leave it at that. So I drove down to the Nordale, and talk about streaking, I'll tell you. I watched that watch right to the minute, and at 10 o'clock I made a sashay through the lobby and back out again, and no Bonnell, and I was pretty happy about that, so I went to the dance. Well, I got home at 2 o'clock in the morning, and all well and good. Next day was Sunday, and I finally made it to lunch, and when I came in the door, everybody gasped. And finally, I found a place and sat down, and then they explained to me, "Where were you last night? Why? What's in trouble?" Well, it seemed that half a dozen people had found rides home along the college road, and here, by golly, was Dr. Bonnell and Otto Geist trudging along the road, walking home. And they said, "Where were you? Weren't you supposed to ride him home?" "Well," I said, "I guess I was." Well, there are great tests of courage in a young man's life, but the next Monday morning to check into his office to get the wastebasket and all, and have him sitting there with that cigar puffing around, took considerable courage, I think. And I didn't know how to break the subject, but I said, "Well, you got home the other night, all right." "Yeah," he says, "I got home." "Well," I said, "you told me if you weren't in there at the lobby, you know, at 10 o'clock, that you'd find your own way home." "Oh, yeah, that's what I told you." He says, "I was there at 5 minutes after." So, having thus instilled in him the virtues of punctuality, I proceeded for the next 3 years to continue to improve his presidency, I'm sure, along those lines. But he had found Otto along the road, and I really, looking back, I think he should have probably discharged me at once, but he was tolerant enough to hold on to me for a few more years. Academically, I was just so-so. I only made the flunk list once, and I want to tell you about that because in those days, there was nothing gentle about a flunk list. It was check in with the dean, and there was your name right up in black and white. And the dean was Dean Patty, and he wasn't too careful with people either. He'd like an explanation of this sort of thing. So I made the flunk list 1 year, and I went in to see him, and he said, "Well, this is the first time you've made the flunk list, yeah?" He said, "What's this? You're having trouble with French." "I'm having trouble with French." "What's the trouble?" I said, "Well, it's my accent." "Well," he said, "you probably mean your pronunciation." I didn't try to explain that to him then, because he wouldn't believe me. And I'm going to try and explain it to him now. And I don't think he'll believe me either. But this is the story. There was a young fellow from Norway by the name of Ivar Skarland, and he talked with quite a Norwegian accent. And he lived across the hall from me. And in the course of the year, I had noticed him sitting out in the lobby reading bound volumes from the library. And I saw what he was reading one time, and it was French, a book, absolutely written in French, and he was just reading it like a novel. So I put that little information in the back of my mind, and when I was taking this course in French, I decided to go in and see if I could get some help. So Ivor helped me, all right. He was pretty good on the written work. And then he'd read the sentences to me, and I'd say the sentences right after him, and then I'd get to class and recite. And Professor Marchand said, "Bill, you're the first American I ever heard that speaks French with a Norwegian accent." And I knew he wouldn't have believed that story then, and I doubt if he believes it now, but that's the truth. I made the flunk list because I couldn't, my pronunciation was pretty bad. Well, to go on with the little topics here, I finally did graduate, and they sent me off to Anchorage, and I committed all the usual sins, and one maybe I shouldn't even tell Fairbanks about, but I was a founding member of the Anchorage Junior Chamber of Commerce, and I don't know whether that deserves apology at the Fairbanks Senior Chamber or not, but at any rate, I put in my service down there. And I was engaged in one of my engineering feats at Whittier when I got a notice that I was I had a job offer at the university. So I came back and joined the faculty in 1942. 1949, Dr. Moore arrived on the scene. So this was a little change. I'd been with Dr. Bunnell for quite a long time, and now a new president took over. But we got along fine. He put me to work, and I think he had me in charge of the summer session. The next thing I knew, he had me as dean of men. And we got along fine except for that airplane of his. And one day, he scared the devil out of me. Right behind my house was a hill. And he got up and cleared a little brush, and I didn't know it. But I was out one day outside the house, and I saw his plane coming over. And boy, oh boy, it came over the house right down into the woods. And I thought, sure, he'd crashed. And I ran up the hill all out of breath, and I ran into Ivor, who lived in the log cabin up there. And I said, "Didn't you see Moore's plane go down?" "Oh," he said, "the plane didn't go down. He has a landing strip up there." So outside of threatening to take me for little autumn airplane rides every now and then, and I don't like little airplanes, we got along pretty good, Terrace, pretty good. Then it was time, about 1953, we had a change of presidency again, and Dr. Patty came and delivered the commencement address, and it was entitled "Be Bold." And after the commencement address, why, the Regents decided that he should be bold enough to be president. And so they talked him into being president. And so in 1953, he showed up to, during the summer, he couldn't take the job. But he was on hand, and Dr. Bunnell was on hand, and Dr. Moore was there. And I was putting out a little newspaper called the Good Old Summer Times. And I used to kind of, tell little stories now and then. And I said, "Well, now, you better stay away from the Bunnell building these days. We've got college presidents running around in three tenses, past, present, and future." I don't know whether they enjoyed it, but I thought it was rather humorous myself. Finally, in 1960, while we had another president and Dr. Wood showed up, and we had an inaugural, and someone decided that somebody had to lead the parade, and so they let me lead the parade. And Dr. Wood thought that I was the marshal of the university. And when he found out that there was no marshal of the university, he called me in and offered me the job. And after he told me what the duties were and one thing or other, he said, "Now about the emoluments." Well, I was familiar with that word because Dr. Bunnell used to talk about emoluments proportional to the services rendered and one thing or other like that. Well, he said, Dr. Wood said, well, a job of this kind you just can't measure in dollars and cents. You just can't put a price tag upon services like being a marshal. No, I said, I don't suppose so. Your salary, I said, is, that's right, zero. But I've had the satisfaction that every year through his whole tenure, he doubled my salary. And just after the commencement, the inauguration the other day, he said, Bill, I'm going to recommend to Dr. Hyatt that this year he triple your salary. Well, enough of nonsense. These have been certainly 32 wonderful years for me. And on a little more serious side, I want to express my personal appreciation to the past presidents of the university and their gracious wives, and to say many thanks for the kindnesses and, let's say, the tolerance that they've shown me these past 25 years. I think I can speak very seriously and say we have been very fortunate. We have had dedicated men heading our university, and they've given tirelessly of their energies and their talents. And I, for one, have been darn proud to work with them. Thank you.
Bill, we thank you for those kind words, most enjoyable, and we'll forgive you for founding the Greater Anchorage Junior Chamber of Commerce. This time it gives me great pleasure to present a small token of our appreciation to the past presidents of the University of Alaska. On behalf of the Chamber of Commerce, and I'm sure all the people of Alaska who appreciate the great work and effort they've put into our present-day university. We'll have the first presentation to Dr. Terrace Moore, president of the University of Alaska, 1949-1953, in grateful appreciation for your many contributions to the state of Alaska. Signed the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Please say a few words.
Well, I do indeed have a sincere message, but I will later have a few confessions to make. But you really touched me when you've given me this. The message that I have is from my wife Katrina and myself, which is that we are a little embarrassed that we so seldom are here. But I want you to know that that is no measure of our affection for the university. We're always here, and our hearts are always here. And we're immensely proud of the University of Alaska. Early this past winter, I had two speaking engagements, for example, over in England. One of them, one Cambridge University campus there. And I was impressed and enormously pleased at the degree to which the University of Alaska is recognized everywhere in the world. It's one of the true world universities. It's perhaps the smaller one of the world universities, but it really is one of those, and so being recognized. Now, Bill Cashin here caused me to have a few confessions that I'll make here in the bosom of the Fairbanks community, of which we used to be a part. And I was listening to him here, and this brought back to me. Somebody said to me after the ceremony yesterday, they said, you were kind of hesitant up there when this wooden key was being passed around. And now, I didn't say anything to that person, but I'll confess it here. I was indeed a little bit hesitant. I'll tell you why. These emoluments he speaks of, the wooden key today carries quite a few more and much larger emoluments than it did back in my time. So when he handed me this key, a thought occurred to me, Ernest. I thought, suppose I just hang on to this key for a while. Don't pass to Ernest. And I began to figure out how much this might be worth per minute. But then suddenly, all in about 2 or 3 seconds, the horrible thought occurred, if I start doing that, it'll drive Bill Cashin up the wall, and you can't have the university marshal climb the wall right here in front of everybody. So I didn't hold the key. I passed it to Ernest. My next confession is really a claim that I'm going to make to President Hyatt, which is this, that he has a very wealthy university, obviously, and more students, more money, more faculty, more buildings, more everything. He even has more presidency emeritus than I had, but I claim, now Bill, I hope you'll forgive me, I claim that I had a much greater wealth of extracurricular assistance than you will ever have from the three of us during my day. And it was really lots of fun. In mentioning that, I should also add that I really, really enjoyed it at the time, very much indeed, and still do. I remember after about the first year, and I went out, I think, to my first convention, the Association of Land-Grant Universities, used to be called then, has another name now, of course, including state universities. And, of course, they had an executive secretary, I guess, in the beginning of time, and this fellow's pretty busy, but he's very helpful. He always fell at his business, especially with new president, to seek him out in his room and say, how are things going? What can I do for you? And when he sought me out, he asked about my predecessor still being on campus and in the president's house and so on. And he said, how's it going? Well, I sort of gave my view of it. And he thought a while, and he said, I have a suggestion for you. He said, I suggest that you really say nothing very much about that until it's all over and you're retired. And then you can say this now. I'll tell you what it was like. It was, these are his words, a rich administrative experience. But I have the fondest memories of those years, and I do indeed remember Bill Cashin, and I do remember these many different jobs he held, and thank God for him in those years because he was there and carried such great responsibilities for such meager salaries. Incidentally, I must correct Bob Hillier. I just delight in correcting Bob
Hillier. Everyone else does too, Terrence.
Well, did you say my budget was $86,000? This does an injustice to my predecessor. He left me with a budget in the millions. I know it was over a million, something like that. Well, it's a small matter.
I never was much of a budget man.
Small matter a long time ago. Well, my next little confession is what I'm doing now. People say to me, while we're here, they say, what are you doing now? And I say, well, little as possible. And this brings an electric silence, and I don't quite know what to say, but now I'll confess to you why I say that. I'm ashamed to confess that I'm a consultant. And I'm sorry Bill Wood isn't here, because I see he's not ashamed to confess he's a consultant. It's all out there in his card and everything. And I say to him, but Bill, the reason I'm ashamed to confess I'm a consultant is on account of that story about consultants. Well, probably some of you know it, but for those of you who don't, you'll understand when I tell you why I'm a little reluctant to confess I'm a consultant. It's a story about the veterinarian and the friend who had a tomcat. And this tomcat, of course, went out at night and did things that tomcats do at night, and a lot of noise along with it, and disturbed the friend and disturbed the neighbors and so on. So the veterinarian performed the inevitable operation. And for two or three weeks, all was quiet, but it healed up. And then, to everybody's astonishment, the friend and the neighbors, it wasn't a louder noise, but there'd be a tomcat noise if I'm visiting tomcat now. And then there'd be strange noise that nobody could understand. Finally, they realized it was coming from the tomcat who'd been operated on. So the friend called up the veterinarian, told him all about this. He said, I don't know what to do. And the veterinarian said, I'll tell you what, he said, I'm quite sure I know what it is. He said, about once in 100 cases when this happens, the tomcat becomes a consultant. So thank you very much for this.
Thank you for those words, Dr. Moore. And I'm sure the Fairbanks community will always consider you and your wife a part of our community. And you may not be much on budgets, but you're not bad on figures.
Oh, very good.
This time I'd like to present our token of appreciation to Dr. Ernest Patty, president of the University of Alaska, 1953 to 1960. Dr. Patty.
Thank you very much. I spent much of my life using one of these. And I think Earl Beistein and I will have to go out now that gold's back up to... We'll have to go out and do a little panning. Well, these past presidents, Terrace, and all of us gathered around to convince Dr. Hyatt, you know, that many people believe that being a college president here at the University of Alaska is a man-killing job. We want to give him concrete evidence that it isn't necessarily so. Because we're just... it looks like the presidents at the University of Alaska seldom die. They just sort of fade away. Looking around the audience tonight, or this afternoon, I'm amazed how few people I see I know. And it reminds me that I had first landed in Fairbanks in 1922. And Ruth Barrick, I believe Ruth was here at that time. John Butrovich, I think John was there. Mr. Patton, weren't you here in 22? And at that time, Fairbanks was dying on the vine, and there didn't seem to be much hope for it. They wondered why in the world there was going to be a college here, what possible future Fairbanks would be. And I know I went down to Nenana to try to rustle up a few students and was told down there that Fairbanks, in a few years, will be nothing but a fish camp on the river. And they believed it. And many people here were terribly discouraged. So this trip back is really a trip to observe miracles. First of all, the miracle of what has happened here in Fairbanks, the developments, and what is going to happen within the next few years, this oil development. A miracle to observe what has happened at the university. Since I turned over to Bill Wood, and he's just created miracles out there. And now we're going to have Dr. Hyatt here, and I'm sure that he's going to carry on in the same tempo. And after being with him yesterday and his fine family, I'm very convinced that the university is going to be in firm hands. Another miracle is the miracle of what's happening up on the North Slope. We were up there yesterday. I went back and visited the Arctic Research Lab after many, many years. And then we were guests of British Petroleum to their fine facilities there, which is just unbelievable. It's an oasis in that desert of snow. They just haven't spared anything to make a very wonderful place for the people to stay. And there is it's just beyond belief. And I think of how I used to ask some of the men in my mining camps to live in bunkhouses. And without an ordinary facility, it made me absolutely ashamed. I almost blushed. So I'm going to pass on now. Thank you very much. Nice being with you. Seeing old friends.
The next token of appreciation is for Dr. William Wood, president of the university of 1960-1973. And Dorothy Jane, would you please come forward and accept this?
Hopefully we can use this. I'm not too sure, though, with that man of mine.
By the way, Bill, Dorothy Jane said she was in favor of quadrupling your salary. So.
Better all the time.
Making great strides. Our last presentation is to Dr. Robert W. Hyatt, president of the University of Alaska, present. Dr. Hyatt.
Thank you very much, Tom. I'm glad you didn't put the final date on this. I realize that all of you understand what an historic occasion this is to have the past presidents all in one place at one time here. We've had this going on now for 2 or 3 days. I'm sorry that Bill was called away today, for it would have been another day of this. But let me digress just a moment to express my appreciation to your speaker today, for Bill will be retiring this year, and this will be essentially the end of another era at the university. For the University of Alaska really has been Bill Cashin and vice versa. And I'm beginning to feel very much like the man who is manager of a circus when one of his performers came up one day. This fellow had been making his living for the last 20 years by being shot out of a cannon in the circus, and he said, boss, he said, I'm going to have to retire. I just can't take it anymore. And the manager said, well, this is dreadful news. He said, I don't know whether I'm ever going to find another man of your caliber. But we've had some wonderful chances for discussion. It's not often that you get 4 of the 5 presidents of a university together. And these past few days have been excellent. We've been reminiscing a bit. I've been cutting myself in on it. They've been reminiscing. But we've also had a chance to talk about the many good things that happen to a university president, along with the other kinds of things, the frustrations, the great tensions that they live through from day to day, and how often the university president will go home after work feeling very discouraged and will talk to his wife, go over the events of the day, tell her about the faculty contingent that came in protesting the extent of the parking fees on the campus, or even any parking fee on the campus, and other student groups coming in with a whole list of insoluble demands about how to improve the sex life on campus and this sort of thing. And old presidents, you know, just go home and just talk to themselves about these kinds of things. At the last meeting of the university president's group in Denver this last year, I happened to overhear a president's wife talking to another one and saying to them, I'm getting terribly disturbed. My husband is coming home now and talking to himself. You know, it goes on for hours and hours, and I really am getting quite upset about it. And the other one said, well, don't really mind that too much. Mine does the same thing, but he thinks I'm listening. Thank you very much.
Good. I'd like to say how grateful we are to all of you could be present here today, and we're sorry that Dr. Wood couldn't be with us today. It's a real pleasure having you. And I'd like to see you come back in about another 5 years, Dr. Patty, and take note of the changes in the Fairbanks community. Very fine. Are there any other comments from the floor? Hearing none, why we stand adjourned. And thank you all for coming.
Very good. Thank you very much.